As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, buddy, here we go. It's hour number three of the Nation. Rangers pregame coming up at 5:30. Eric Nadel's going to join us at 4:40. We'll talk to him about Rangers, Braves, and everything going on with your baseball team. But it's time right now for a football fix. Here's Wolchuk.
We have a new offensive lineman that has just signed, and it's not with the Cowboys. That's next.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir.
Wrong side!
Left side!
Wrong side!
Left side!
I use these for acid indigestion.
So what are we going to use these for?
Intimidation.
You know I got to get my fix, man.
Former Brown center Ethan Pocic has started 97 games in his NFL career before he tore his Achilles last year, signing a one-year deal with the Baltimore Kyle Yeomans. As he is healthy, he's going to have a chance to replace former center Tyler Linderbaum. Deals 1 year, $4.5 million, according to Shefty and Ian Rappaport. So the Ravens trying to get their center replacement here in mid-July. But that was a name that was kind of floating around. If the Cowboys needed some offensive line depth, and they really don't have a backup center. T.J. Bass is the guy right now who's a guard that they would have playing center if something happened to Cooper Beebe. Maybe Ethan Pocic would be a guy that you could bring in. Well, nope, Baltimore has snagged him. So there's a team making moves right before camp. Staying with the Browns. Guys, Lucius, have you heard the new track that Shedeur Sanders has dropped?
No.
He's got a new single. It's his second single.
I like his
single.
Old one, though.
Okay, so this is called Turn Back. He has a whole behind-the-scenes deal that he put out with his brother Shiloh. Again, I think Shiloh's fantastic when it comes to social media. Now, it might end up being good, and Max Crosby's another one of these guys that drops singles. It's just like he's putting himself in a spot where you're trying to be the starting quarterback. And people are just naturally going to go with, well, what's your focus? Is it on football? Is it on your rap career? Is it on social media? It for Shedeur, it's like he's in a lose-lose situation. It's the offseason. Do what you want to do. And maybe he's angling for career post-football. But unfortunately, he's going to get a lot of heat for this one.
I was thinking it might have been a football rap song. You know, Turn Back, maybe his pocket strategy.
Turn back protection.
Turn back.
Song about running towards the opposite end zone.
Yeah, Turn Back. It might be good. I need to listen to it. I haven't heard it yet, but he did drop that new single as he's in a quarterback one battle with Deshaun Watson. And Jared Verse is saying all he has seen since he's been traded from the Rams to the Browns is just two elite quarterbacks.
Yeah.
They're in a battle to be QB1.
It's Lions season, as usual. It's a lot of seasons, especially if
you're
live season.
Man. I get it.
Yeah, you do.
It's Kool-Aid season, best shape of your life season, 100%. It's all those things, man. This is the time. I want to go back to Mac Brown, and he does his podcast,
playing
which
a
is
lot
awesome.
Of golf.
Yeah, of course. I mean, retirement, he's enjoying it big, big way. But he was going back to that 2008 season. No, 2009. It was like 2008. The game was played 2009. Why are you laughing, Brian? Huh? What is so
calendars
freaking funny?
Are tough, bro.
Right? Sometimes days are hard.
I'm just wondering.
The
which
game,
way we're
the
doing.
Fiesta Bowl game, for the record, played in 2009 of January.
Yes.
But it's the 2008 season where Texas got screwed. They lose to Tech, and they don't get to play that natty against Florida because Oklahoma got gifted that opportunity. So they play in the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State. And they're, of course, talking about how pissed they are. Like, we should be playing the national championship game. Screw this. So here's the story from Mac Brown, how he got his team ready and focused to go ahead and beat what I believe was a really good Ohio State team that year.
After the Tech loss, and all we talked about was the tiebreaker, and all we talked about was Oklahoma and us getting screwed because this. So Al Groves, the head coach at Virginia, they're not going to a bowl game. He's been the head coach of the Jets. He's a friend of mine. He says, can I come and watch you practice for the bowl game? I said, yeah, but bring a pad and pencil. So he brings a pad and pencil, and I said, watch 5 days of practice, then come and tell me what you see. So Al comes in, he sits down, said, you got a really good team. Said, I love the way you practice. Your players look good. They're all about the same at each position, so you obviously have recruited to a standard. He said, but you're going to lose the game to Ohio State. And I said, why? He said, because all you're talking about is the Tech loss and you getting screwed in the tiebreaker by Oklahoma. He said, you got to create an edge. And can you imagine Texas playing Ohio State and you not being excited about it? So, man, you better wake up.
Wake up.
And you better start creating an edge right now. So I went downstairs. I put that quote up on the lockers and I started talking about the history of Woody Hayes and Archie Griffin and all the great players at Ohio State and how our game with them in 05 and just talking about Ohio State and how important this game was, and told our coaches, if you mention Tech or Oklahoma again, I'm going to fire you. I'm tired. We're not doing this. We're the ones that lost the game at Tech. We allowed a tiebreaker to screw us, but if we'd won the game, there wouldn't be any tiebreaker, and then we'd go win the game against a great Ohio State team.
It's pretty epic. The game itself, that Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah. Yeah, that was really, really good. Colt McCoy was in his bag. Quan Cosby.
Quan was awesome.
Unbelievable in that
Terrell
game.
Terrell Pryor was the quarterback for Ohio State. But, I mean, it's one where, yeah, I'd be doing the same thing. Like, if I were a player on that team, we should be playing the national championship game against Florida. We got absolutely screwed. We beat Oklahoma on a neutral site by 10, and this tiebreaker deal held us back. Now, you know, if Blake Gideon catches that interception against Texas Tech, then you don't have to worry about it. But you didn't play well enough. Michael Crabtree and the Red Raiders had your number that day. Instead, turn around, you got a great opportunity in a BCS Fiesta Bowl. Beat the number 10 ranked team in the country, and they did. But another just cool story.
It is a cool story, and I always like listening to Mac Brown talk about that kind of stuff. You know, I just meaningless bowl games. I'm sorry, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think the
cool history lesson
at that time had a little bit more to it than now. You know, these meaningless games when you're not in the CFP, but
they were on life support already. You know
what, like the BCS games?
Yeah. Bowl championship series. What is this? It's a facade. It's a fugazi.
It's fugazi. Yeah. It's fairy dust. Titans are inducting Chris Johnson into the Ring of Honor. Week one against the Jets. They're not wasting any time.
Not wasting time.
Put him in. 40 years old. The ALS diagnosis that he came out with a few weeks ago when he sat down with Michael Strahan. But the Titans, Amy Adams Strunk, their owner, said Chris Johnson holds a special place in the hearts of our organization and our fans. His stats speak for themselves, and he will forever remain a leader in our record books. But the man behind the yardage deserves just as much celebration. We look forward to welcoming him home on September 13th and officially inducting him into the Titans Ring of Honor. Titans-Jets, two of the worst teams in the NFL last year. Do the Titans get a home dub for him against the Jets?
I think chances are pretty good. They gave themselves the best chance possible.
I think that's a good game to put them in.
It's the Bob Sala revenge game. Bob of course Sala. They're going to win.
Yeah, Bob Sala. Here we go.
Yeah.
It's going to be the all-fire blitz, man.
I like it.
Watch out, Geno. David Bailey, Kenyon Sadiq, Omar Cooper Jr., and D'Angelo Pons. This could be the turnaround draft for the Jets.
It definitely could be the foundational one that they look back. Like, if they land a legit quarterback at some point, then they could be looking back at this draft like, okay, this is when everything started to change for the better here.
Guys, who's the most improved defense in the NFC East? Is it the Cowboys or is it the Commanders of Washington?
Ooh.
Leo Chenault today in an interview. We have our revamped defense, and we just got ourselves a bunch of dogs. Leo Chenault, who's part of that revamped defense, coming over from Kansas City as a Mike linebacker.
Good player.
Said, you come on over, I want to play downhill. I got a lot of flexibility as a linebacker, and I'm going to play with a lot of flexibility in this defense. They've got their new defensive coordinator in Durante Jones, who they brought over from Minnesota, who was with Brian Flores. And Bleacher Report, and it is Bleacher Report, I don't know how seriously I take them all the time, but they said five most improved defenses in the league. See if you hear the Cowboys.
They're turning over just as many starting positions as the Cowboys.
It's a lot. It's a lot. They got Charles Amenihue, Leo Chenault. They drafted Sonny Styles. They signed Adolphe Owe, who might be the best signing out of anybody in free agency, like between the Cowboys and the Commanders. Kalyvon Chaisson, who was good last year, can he be good again now? Rasul Douglas, the corner. Amik Robinson, the corner. Nick Cross at safety.
Yeah, all that's really strong. I mean, Robertson was pretty dang good for Detroit. Nick Cross, underrated safety. And the guys that they added there in the front seven that you already mentioned. I could definitely see them. Like, are we saying who's making the bigger jump from what they were last
year,
or just
improved?
Which defense is going to be better? Like,
just improvement.
Yeah.
If you include Quinnen Williams from last year, then I think it tips the scales totally in favor of the Cowboys.
Yeah.
They were Washington was amongst the worst three or four defenses in all your statistical categories as well, along with the Cowboys. But they were already on the uptick last year when they brought in Quinnen Williams, and their run defense, you know, some of their defensive metrics were really so. You know, I would say Washington brought in a lot of guys, but there's no game wreckers in here, you know, and they're going to rely on a much heavier blitz approach, I think, to create pressure. Well, the Cowboys are just, I think, you know, have one of the biggest cheat codes in the game right now, which is Quinnen Williams. Washington just hasn't added any players like that. They haven't added a player with the upside of Caleb Downs, the best safety maybe in the division now.
Sure.
Other than DeJean, you know, sitting here with Jalen Thompson. So you have just so much good stuff going down.
As guys who cover the draft as well as you do, wouldn't you call it a wash between Sonny Styles and Downs, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I think it's fair to say that.
I mean, would you call it a wash right now? As far
I think both are going to be really good.
I think either one of those guys you would have loved to have.
Absolutely. I mean, I had Downs as my top player. You did as well. I think Styles was my seventh best.
Okay. I just kind of feel like, though, when you start talking about defensive players, maybe Sonny Styles isn't the seventh best player. You know, maybe he should be. But I think the Cowboys, as fans, we would have loved to have had either one of those guys.
For sure we would have, yeah.
You know, I mean, you ended up with the guy who's
the better of the two.
But I kind of feel like that Sonny Styles is really going to help the Commanders.
Well, especially with Frankie Louvu, who they have.
Frankie Louvu. Dorrance Armstrong was hurt too, right?
Yes, he was.
He was a guy that was on a really good sack run until he got hurt. So, they, you know, hey, I think Dallas made some improvements. I do kind of like what the Commanders have done.
Well, and that
I don't think
said,
they got the best coordinator, though. I'm
with you on that.
I think running Minnesota's system is you have to have guys to do it the way that, you know, Minnesota has. What I mean, there's a lot of cerebral football. You know, if you have guys that are making the problem with the Commanders, and they made so many switches in the secondary. If you look at everything,
big time.
I mean, other than Mike Standerstrell and those guys, I mean, they brought in a lot of guys, but that was a team that was having problems covering people on the back end, not lining up right, letting guys run free. You know, if you're going to play that scheme,
sure,
you got to have guys that are right on top of it. And we'll see if the Commanders have that guy. I mean, having a guy like Leo Chenault and all that, I think, helps. You know, he's a veteran guy, smart guy. But I think Dallas got the better of the coordinators. Maybe the Commanders added the better of the.
I think they played more in free agency.
Yes, their full body of free agency is going to make. I mean, like Jalen Thompson, they probably got the best in Owe. They got the best player out of the, like, Timber Thompson. I think you're going with Owe, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think the Cowboys' draft impact, Sonny Styles is going to have a big impact.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a little bit higher on him than you were, but I still think Caleb Downs between the two. If I had to take one, it would be Downs overall. It might be that if the full body work. I think you're right about the coordinator. The Cowboys had their chance at both. They interviewed both.
Oh, I was not high at all. You're right. I was not high at all on Sonny Styles myself.
Yeah.
But I just wonder, that's one of those guys where
be a great fit.
That's one of those guys where I kind of feel like maybe, and again, second round grade, 13 first round grades.
Sure.
That's a, you're
so 14. You had him at what, 14?
Yeah, exactly. So that, to me, it's not a huge, huge difference. But I just wonder if overall, though, I just think that Dallas got the better of the defensive coordinators here.
Right.
And I'm interested to see if, in fact, that you could play that Minnesota scheme with these players that they currently have.
That'll be fascinating because ultimately that could dictate who wins this division.
Wasn't Rashawn Gary, didn't he have more sacks last year than Owe? I just want to challenge you a little bit on that and tell me why you feel like Odafe
is a much better pass rusher than Gary is. I mean, like, Gary might have just had the sack totals, but that was all in, what, the first half of the season.
Always, I think, were the second half when he finally got to the Chargers.
Yeah, he went to a new team. So I think, like, situation and fit is a big difference. I just think, yeah, I would rather have if I've got both, who could I pick? I would take Owe over Gary. But for with the scheme they're running, Gary's a good fit for what the Cowboys want to do because they're putting so much emphasis on their edges to be able to also play the run. Gary might be a better run defender than what Owe is.
We have Eric Nadell coming up at 4:40. Thank you for that fix, Woolchuck. Unanswered questions about your Cowboys as our countdown to training camp continues coming up next in the Nation.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now, Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, I have some unanswered questions about the 2026 Cowboys outlook for you as our countdown to Oxnard rolls on here on your home of the Cowboys. Rangers pregame is coming up at 5:30. Segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car or truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There is never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Frankels are the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Okay, back in May, Clayton Adams was talking about red zone. Said they went away from their strengths down there too much inside the 20. They were a run and play action team. And then when they got inside, they turned into more of just a drop back passing team. Will going to run and play action inside the red zone make the Cowboys better down there? I think they were 16th in red zone EPA per play, and they were like top five in the rest of the field. But check this out. Their EPA per pass on play action for the Cowboys, plus 0.44 per play. Like third best in the NFL. On non-play action passes, plus 0.17. So 2.7 times more efficient out of play action. Will that work in the red zone?
Man, that's a really good question. Everything becomes a little bit more challenging when the field shrinks on you. I would still think that play action should be something that should work for you down there, especially when you have Dak, Lamb, and Pickens. Like that trio right there should be something that would be successful for you. But that's I need to go in and just kind of figure out overall how play action works for other teams in the red zone. How much is that something? Because I haven't really pinpointed that before. But off the top of my head, I would think that should still be something that works for you. But the windows get tighter, you know, and you would think that would help open up some windows for you using the play action. So off the top of my head, I can't imagine why play action wouldn't work for you in the red zone.
See, that's what I was thinking, but then you have to imagine the Cowboys have a pretty strong brain trust. How would they go away with that? Do you think that's a frustration of Clayton Adams? Like, is this a function of shoddy calling plays and maybe coming off of what Clayton Adams would prefer? I wonder how that internal conversation goes on there, because if Clayton Adams mentioned it in his media, like, we went away from what worked down there in the red zone, isn't that kind of pointing the finger a little bit at your head coach?
Yes.
Maybe not to be a jerk, but just as a point of clarification.
Just being honest about what the facts are, and Shoddy does seem like a guy who's willing to adjust and take advice. And it's interesting that you didn't really see that come to fruition in the red zone when it comes to the play action stuff. But all off season, I'm sure this has been one of the big things in terms of research projects that Clayton Adams is trying to figure out, how can we get better down here? Because there's no excuse. When you have Dak, Lamb, and Pickens, there's really no excuse.
Yeah, I mean, even Ferg cut a ton of touchdowns last year. I mean, I do like the idea. I think there's a lot that you could do with play action in the red zone, whether it's just trying to get the defense flowing one way and then you've got something backside, which we see work a lot, where you have like a tight end kind of delay, like they're blocking and then they slowly release. The fullback, like we saw the Cowboys with Tyron Tyler Klutz had that nice touchdown in that playoff game against Green Bay in 2016. Or it's like the boots and the waggles, which you always talk about, Brian.
Yeah.
You're getting the quarterback on the move. Sometimes that'll put stress on a defender. Do I need to come up? Like, is Dak actually going to take it off and run, which he is capable of doing in a red zone situation, and then he can just float it over the top. Maybe that leaves a player open there. So I do think there's a lot of different ways that the offense could benefit by just putting the defense in stress situations with the play action game in the red zone.
A lot of things to uncover as our countdown to camp continues. I was also looking at run versus pass efficiency out of 12, because I was talking a couple of weeks ago about how they're 12 not good enough.
No.
With the two tight ends on the field.
Yeah, so they ran 190 plays. 100 of them were running. And they were negative EPA, and that's what weighs down. But the 90 plays that they threw it, they were higher in EPA per play in 12 than 11. So it's almost like, and you know what? You go into the bottom five of the EPA per play rankings out of 12. You also had the Patriots, the Rams, and the Lions, all bottom five in EPA per run. Out of 12.
Yes.
They're almost sacrificing the run and doing it more than the pass just to set up the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Like, being efficient play in and play out is less important than trying to get the defense unlocked a little bit so you can spring something open. They've gotten so good at stopping chunk plays that you have to intentionally run inefficient runs out of 12 in order to get your opportunities in the pass game.
That's definitely something, and I've seen people write about McVay, and I think Kittle's even talked about it with Shanahan, like some of these play callers. Ben Johnson's probably like that. Well, they'll sacrifice just to set something up for later in the game, where, yes, it's not necessarily all about we want to be successful with this personnel grouping or down and distance. If it works, great, but it's all about setting something up that they want to hit them with later on. So there is something to that.
Okay, next unanswered question. Can they get a handle on these penalties?
No.
Third most penalized offense in 2026.
No.
False start. Why do you say no?
No. Because it's the history. It goes all the way back to, you could go back to Garrett. You could go back. This team is always, I say always, but remember McCarthy talking about it and all that. Oh, we're coaching it up and we're trying to prevent them. And nah, you know, now, is it go back to, and maybe things will be a little better with Christian Parker? Do you have more disciplined players? But do you have a team full of Sam Williams? What do you got? You know, maybe, let's Diggs, this, that. There always seems something kind of, they talk about it until you actually get players that have the discipline to play and not get penalized, then you're going to get penalized. And hopefully their defenses, hopefully they'll turn that thing around. But you could go all the way back. I'm sure you go all the way back to damn Wade Phillips and that whole thing. You know, we always, this whole, it's the Raiders, it's the Cowboys, it's always the most penalized teams every single year. And coaches have talked about it ad nauseum and asked about it during the week. And, we're addressing this and addressing that. And they really haven't done anything.
So you think it's in the building? Is it part of the Cowboys' entitlement?
I don't know if it's entitlement or it's just players that aren't very smart. You know, are players that just don't have discipline enough, you know, if they're coached to say, hey, we're not supposed to hold, or hey, play this technique, and then they don't do that, and it costs them defensive holdings, hands to the face, lining up offsides. It's just a constant theme with this organization, no matter who's been the coach.
Yeah, I mean, just going back 5 years, they have the most penalties, most accepted penalties in the NFL against them. They were dead balls, I guess, first, which is basically last, in 2021. They were 10th in 2022, 3rd in 23, 4th in 24, and 1st, once again, most penalties in the league last year. So even just looking at the last 5 years, that's what they do. And all the pre-snap stuff, like, that is just – that's inexcusable.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even know. I mean, you know the snap count. You're on offense.
This
shouldn't be that much of a problem. But it is interesting, like, because there's something to the culture of it being systemic. And I know Shoddy wants to fix the culture and believes in it. So we'll have to see what kind of stuff he has planned for training camp. to try to get these guys out of that mode of thinking it's okay. I think it's about a sense of urgency and accountability and fear. You know, you have to fear that I could lose my spot on this roster if I don't get this figured out. And I don't know if it's been possible for head coaches to establish that. Maybe since Jimmy. I don't know if Parcells had any luck. I wasn't around then. Did the players fear for their roster spot when Parcells was the coach?
Yeah, Bill was big on that. I mean, but we were so bad. Fear for a roster spot. Like, yeah, you're getting rid of. You know, you're getting rid of a player that can't play, that won't play in the league anymore. I mean, it's just, I know the last several years, I mean, even it goes, like you say, the Garrett administration, you know, it's an ongoing problem, and they talk about it all the time, and it, and they do nothing. Until you get more disciplined football players or players that understand the rules a little bit better or play with better technique, you're going to struggle with this.
Okay, and then final question. It's a two-parter. Kick coverage and turnovers. Big problems last year with field position and how you could be just seventh in scoring despite being so good in yards per game and EPA per play. They were losing field position constantly with turnovers. I guess kick coverage would be the one that you have the most control over. They retained their special teams coordinator.
They did.
Turning over some of these guys. How confident are you? I mean, it really came to a head in the Detroit game where you couldn't stop them from starting their drives on the 40-yard line.
Like, you don't have C.J. Goodwin anymore, and I think no disrespect to him, but that's a step in the right direction. I just felt like that was a waste of a roster spot. He was also getting penalized a bunch. Marquise Bell's a guy that's been penalized quite a bit. I wonder about his roster spot heading into the season. So it's really the depth in the draft picks. So the guys like Darion Kendrick that they signed, like Maris Leafau, like some of these guys that aren't going to end up being starters for you but are like 3 through 5 position groups, how good are they? Those are going to be the guys that are going to end up being really key special teams contributors. You feel great about Brandon Aubrey. Even last year when it came to the punting, Bobby had the nugget about Brian Anger, and he didn't have a single touchback. Like, he was down in balls inside the 20-yard line. So you feel good about your operation with your long snapper, your kicker, your punter, the holder, but the coverage units definitely need to get better. And your kicker and punt return units, that comes back to Turpin. And I think there's absolutely something to Turpin focusing more on being a receiver than just being a really badass kick and punt returner.
I agree.
And he wasn't a good enough receiver justify continuing down that path. We got Eric Nadell joining us next here. It's the G-Bag Nation on the Fan.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you very much, Lucius. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Evan Grant, an hour ago, reporting that Corey Seager doing some straight-line jogging and running on the field at Truist Park. That's your Corey Seager update here on your home of the Rangers. So we have the pregame coming up at 5:30. It is time now for the Eric Nadell Show, brought to you by Kubota and by TXU Energy. And a good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm doing great, Gavin. How are you?
Doing pretty good. I regret that I missed your World Cup limerick last week, by the way. Hell of a job on that.
Oh, you can probably dig it out on Twitter, but it had to be sent in about 8 different parts because they kept exceeding the character limit. But I'll send you a copy of it.
Thanks, man. It was genius. And I think it would be G-Bag of the Day right now if it wasn't for Bassick's thoughts about keeping Wyatt Langford healthy. Have you heard that?
No. Does he want him to DH?
I'm not sure if he wants him to DH. I think he wants him to stay healthy. And you can dig that out as well. I think he'll enjoy it. But, Rangers and Braves tonight in Atlanta, man. How do you like the Rangers' chances going up against Chris Sale?
You know, the Rangers used to have a guy named Adam Rosales. He was a utility guy, right-handed batter, and he owned Chris Sale. And since Adam Rosales isn't around, I'm not crazy about our chances against Chris Sale. I'm just hoping that Cal Quantrill can pitch well enough, and he's been pitching great, that it's a low-scoring game, and maybe the Rangers can pull it out later in a battle of bullpens.
it's kind of one thing to be doing better against lefties, but then it's the Chris Sale challenge is a whole other ball of wax.
Yeah, this guy's a unicorn. You know, he's a complete freak. You know, he throws from this crazy low sidearm angle, and his velocity seemed to vary on his fastballs, like from 90 to 97. You know, he's a probable future Hall of Famer if he stays healthy. And, you know, you always hate facing a guy like that. And it's really weird, though, how you get guys who can hit particular pitchers like that. Like Randy Johnson used to have trouble with this guy that the Rangers had for just a little while named Jack Voigt.
Oh, he was
a right-handed batter, a pinch hitter, you know, extra outfielder. He could hit Randy Johnson. He wasn't a great hitter overall, but for some reason he could hit Randy Johnson just the way Adam Rosales could hit Chris Sale.
Eric Nadel here with you on 105.3 The Fan. Okay, so what's the most interesting thing going into the second half of the season for you?
I want to start with Jacob Latz and the total lack of respect that he got around the All-Star game. I want to say this because I might forget it and then not say it. First of all, he didn't get voted on by the players. He had to be added on by the league, which ridiculous. Second of all, when Fox posted the graphic of the All-Star team, they had Gavin Collier's picture with his name.
Ouch.
And then when he came into the game, they didn't say a word about him. They were talking to somebody else in the dugout, and Latz disposed of Luis Arraez on four pitches. They never told you a thing about Jacob Latz, and then he was gone from the game. So I just wanted to get that out. It really bothered me because this guy's been incredible. And no, he's not the key to the second half of the season. I think the key to the second half of the season is keeping the starting rotation healthy and getting help in the bullpen. I know most people are going to focus on the offense, and you need Corey Seager back, you need Wyatt Langford back. That's an obvious thing to me. That's a given to me. But if the Rangers are going to be serious contenders, the bullpen needs to get back to performing the way it was the first 2 months of the season. And maybe guys just needed a break. But my thinking is the Rangers at the deadline need to go out and get a couple of guys, you know, like they did in 2023 when they got not only Aroldis Chapman but also Chris Stratton to help out of the bullpen. And you go way back into, you know, the 2010, 2011 teams who got Koji Uehara at the deadline and Mike Adams at the deadline, helped the Rangers win a pennant, get to the World Series. I think they might need, you know, that kind of a deal.
Why do you think they did our guy Latz like that? Do you think they just didn't know much about him? You know, do you think it slipped their mind? Like from a broadcaster's perspective, how's that happen where a guy doesn't get recognized?
Yeah, I think he kind of sneaked up on him. You know, for one thing, he wasn't the closer at the start of the year. And, you know, people didn't necessarily realize, if you just looked at the stats, which is what the players do when they vote, they didn't know that this guy's had nine saves of more than one inning. They just know that he had 18 saves or whatever it was, and he was fourth or fifth in the league. They didn't know who he was to begin with. So they're going to vote for Chapman, and they're going to vote for the two guys who are leading the league in saves, Cade Smith and Louis Varland. And that's really how the vote went down.
With Elias Diaz catching again tonight, Nicky Lopez, who's been fantastic, do you have any Ranger comparisons for two guys the front office was able to add during the season that have had this much of a positive impact?
Boy, Zach, not like that. Not where they, you know, not where they picked up released players. You know, they've picked up key guys during the season. Benji Molina was a huge pickup in 2010 when the Rangers needed catching help. But to get guys who became free agents because they were released, you know, that's pretty much unheard of. And to have them play this kind of a role, I don't remember anything like this. Quantrill, you know, at least was in our system last year. Rangers picked him up last year when he was released. But, you know, he could probably go into that category too.
Gavin gave the update on Corey Seager, and I think that there's a lot of fans that have been frustrated with the lack of availability. I mean, I think, look, everybody would wish that Corey was available, Eric. But, you know, from your vantage point, what you're able to kind of get, I mean, what are your expectations for Corey in the second half? How much do you think we're even going to see him?
I don't have any idea. I really don't think anyone has any idea. I don't think Corey has any idea. You know, he's really frustrated by this whole thing. You know, back trouble is a new thing for him this year. You know, he even said at one point, I wish this was a hamstring. You know, I'd know how to manage it and come back from it. It's a complete unknown. You know, it's just total guesswork. You know, all we can do is cross our fingers and hold our breath and pray and knock on wood and do all the other things that we think might help.
How impressive have you been with Justin Foscue, and how much is he kind of the catalyst for the bump in the beating the left-handed pitchers?
He's the number one reason, no question about it. He's been fantastic. And so many people had written him off. And when he got hurt in spring training this year, it was totally easy to write him off, because that's when he could have made an impression, reminded people that this guy was a first-round draft pick and a can't-miss prospect. And, you know, for him to be doing this is, you know, is great. You know, I really respect him. You know, he could have gotten buried in the system. He could have gotten buried in his own mind. And somehow he didn't. Somehow he stayed positive enough that when he finally got a legitimate opportunity, you know, he was able to take advantage of it. I think it's great. Great guy, too. He's fun to talk to.
Eric, the team that we need to worry about the most in the West, is it going to be the Astros or the Mariners?
I still think it's the Mariners. You know, they're, for one thing, they're very aggressive on the trade market, generally speaking. And I think that Jerry DePoto will go out and he'll get some more offense. He'll probably get another pitcher or two, even though they're strong in pitching. You know, they might wind up trading one of their starting pitchers in order to get something else that they need. And they're one of the only teams in position to do that. They've got a guy at Double A named Cade Anderson, who's considered the number one pitching prospect in the country. He's got a 140 ERA at Double A. He was a first-round draft choice last year out of college.
Yeah.
And, you know, they could go and trade a Bryce Miller or a Brian Wu or a George Kirby or somebody like that and just call that guy up and potentially not miss a beat.
Who do you think gets the credit for keeping this thing on the rails through all this Rangers adversity?
Well, I think Skip Schumacher's done an incredible job, and his coaching staff has too. You know, it's definitely a collective effort with those guys, and they work hard. They don't take a minute off. And it's funny, you know, our job in dealing with the manager is to do the shows and also to develop a relationship where you're comfortable hanging out with them, and maybe you'll get some off-the-record information once in a while. And he doesn't have time for that. Huh. He is going from one meeting to another meeting to a meeting with a player. You know, he's a great communicator with the players. This guy doesn't relax. And, you know, he's young enough, I think, to operate that way. But it's been a while since we had a manager with that kind of energy. And the players like it. And I think that he's a real big reason that the Rangers are still very much in it.
You drinking and thinking about anything in particular this afternoon?
I've been drinking iced coffee, and I'm actually going to a concert tonight. I'm not working. I'm going to a concert. Chris Botti, a jazz trumpet player who's fantastic, and his lead singer, John Splithoff, who's my favorite male vocalist. So I'm thinking that I got to keep my energy level up.
There you go.
And so that's what I'm thinking here this afternoon. And I'm also thinking I'm excited about this Ranger Braves series. I haven't seen the Braves at all this year. I know they've fallen from a huge lead to a small lead, but they're always fun to watch.
Yes, sir. Enjoy your weekend, and we look forward to catching up with you next week.
Thanks.
Salute. There he goes. Eric Nadel, brought to you by Kubota and by TXU Energy. Big series, you know, on the road, first place team, their horse, their ace, Chris Sale on the hill tonight. Pregame coming up at 5:30. Chief, what are we doing next?
Friday News Dump, another win for this college program, and the rest of the news as we prep our bodies for the weekend next in the nation.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi, I'm Dan Hanses.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters. And we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.